Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. Tuesday, a big day in American history, the inauguration of a new president. You don't have to look far in the newspapers, on TV, the radio, or the internet to realize how very different President-elect Barack Obama's style of leadership is from the soon-to-be former President George Bush. Very different. And what does all that have to do with HealthLink On Air? Well, you may remember we've had two interesting conversations in the past couple of months with Dr. Usha Satish. Dr. Satish is a professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at SUNY Upstate. She and her colleagues study and then work with leadership styles, among other things. Dr. Satish is again joining us by phone this morning. Good morning, Dr. Satish.
Good morning.
We're also joined by Robert Riney, COO of the Henry Ford Health System in Detroit, Michigan, who's one of Dr. Satish's colleagues and who's also worked on the subject of leadership in crisis. Good morning, Mr. Riney.
Good morning.
We so appreciate your joining us this morning. Certainly, leadership in crisis is pertinent to the beginning of Mr. Obama's presidency. We're hoping the two of you can give us some perspective on what we can expect as we move forward through all that change we've been promised. And Dr. Satish, you've identified some of those key elements in one's leadership style. So let's start with them in general before we apply them to Mr. Obama.
Sure. Based on our research, we have found that there are four key elements that are very critical to leadership under crisis. And these are perspective, self-reflection, quiet struggles, and reduction of negative energy. I'll talk about perspective first. What this actually, if you were to define perspective in terms of decision-making, it really talks about how broadly people approach problems, because the stronger the perspective and the deeper the breadth of approach, the better the strategies that are developed under crisis typically tend to be. And this has been borne out in our research. Additionally, people with these abilities and deeper perspectives also recover faster from impending crisis and problems, thereby helping them stay on top of things and move on beyond the crisis and think further.
Ah, so Mr. Riney, can you give us some examples of how that would work in our everyday lives, for instance?
It really results in a few things. One is just asking oneself as a leader how you show up to play the game.
Okay.
And while that sounds simple, it's actually a very powerful approach to take as an individual, and you can apply it to all elements of your life, whether that game is your family, whether that game is work, whether that game is any particular challenge that you face. But taking a pause and asking yourself, how did I show up to play the game, and did how I show up to play the game result or produce the right results that I was after?
So what would a leader, how would a leader show up?
I think that for us at Henry Ford Health System, we ask our leaders to develop a self-reflective process where they can review the strategy, the goal, and then the behavioral aspects, which is critical, of how the goal setting was done and how the results were achieved. And through that process, what leaders often find is it's the behavioral attributes that either determine success or failure of a particular strategy. And so by kind of mining or digging into how one shows up for the game, you start to develop a sense of what strategies and what behavioral presence works and what behavioral presence causes barriers and, quite frankly, causes failures in your company.
Right. And then, of course, if you have barriers and failures, then you're not attending to the crisis at all. So that introduced the idea of self-reflection. Dr. Satish, what exactly do we mean by self-reflection?
That's really the ability to look at oneself critically, both with a sense of appreciation for your successes and achievements, as well as an analysis of failure. And by analysis of failure, I don't mean in a hypercritical negative way, but a more positive way, using the failure as an opportunity to succeed in the future. We find that people who are good at self-reflection tend to be better at developing long-term visions, both for themselves as well as for the organization at large. And an additional benefit we find is their ability to help others, which is very important to team building.
Sure, of course. And I would also say then, too, are you suggesting that I need to be able to go back and look at my failures and not see them as failures, but rather what can I learn from them to move forward?
Absolutely. And I think that's a good approach to take, because that not only enables yourself, but you also develop or empower yourself with the ability to help others, and thereby you will be an effective team player and also build teams very well.
All right, we move on to our next element, which is quiet struggles. What does that mean?
Quiet struggles is basically the ability to have honest and open dialogue about yourself in the presence of your team. And actually, this begins with having this dialogue with yourself. And that helps with both crisis resolution, and it helps with providing an opportunity to look at antecedents and consequences in a scientific manner.
Okay. And then, Mr. Riney, how do we then translate that to just you and me? Those are big words again. And how does that come across in a leadership style?
You know, I think it comes across primarily by modeling the way. And as it relates to quiet struggles and reflection of what the team has accomplished and what the team has done well and what the team has done not so well, what I like to promote within my team is example setting. So I will oftentimes start a meeting talking about my reflection of my own activity over the last period of time. And I will state with great pride the things that I think that I brought to the table in a very effective manner. But I will equally talk about the struggles I had and something that I did that I thought had an unintended consequence or resulted in negative behavior, and what I've learned from that. And what I find is if you're able to do that and you can get a team to do that, then you can go through a very healthy cleansing period.
Mm.
You can sort of deal with the issue, feel good about the things you've accomplished, be stimulated and motivated about the learnings from the things that you didn't do so well, and then move on.
So there's a certain balance to it, isn't there? And I want to move on to make sure we have enough time. The last of the elements is reduction of negative energy.
Right, and that is has been shown to be very imperative in enhancing overall organizational harmony and sustenance. It also helps with innovative thinking. What it really does is reduce these barriers to open thinking, reduce the barriers to having deeper perspective and greater self-reflection. And that, I think, is very important in today's times, especially in today's with today's financial and economic crisis. It
yes.
becomes really relevant.
Mr. Riney, it sounds like what you're doing is saying this isn't about blame. This is about learning and moving forward.
It's absolutely, and it's also about creating context. As Dr. Satish said, there are a lot of negative issues that feel like they are assaulting us on a daily basis. And I think one of the keys for us as individuals and one of the keys for leaders in organizations is to create context and really make sure that energy is being appropriately funneled into positive activities. I equate negative energy to macaroni and cheese. You know, it really is comfort food. It's comforting in some ways to be negative, but it really doesn't necessarily produce a good result and isn't necessarily healthy if you get stuck for a prolonged period of time.
With macaroni and cheese, it's a good metaphor. Now, quickly, let's talk about then Mr. Obama and how you see him in terms of these elements.
Well, based on our data and these elements that are critical to crisis leadership, we would say Obama does very well. He has demonstrated perspective and self-reflection in terms of his very reflective, thoughtful styles of execution, both during the campaign and consequently after the campaign. And as far as quiet struggles and reduction of negative energy are concerned, he has spoken a lot about these and has demonstrated that, I think, in his choice of members to represent his team. And his data is pretty strong, actually, and very promising in terms of these four elements.
Well, I do remember when we spoke to you in November, you did feel as if, based on what you'd been able to observe, he really did own up to all of these key elements, didn't he?
That's correct.
What do you think? We have so many crises in front of us. I mean, every time we turn around, there's another one. If it's not just the economy or health care or certainly foreign policy and so forth, he's going to have to juggle. Is he going to be a good juggler? What do you think about that, Mr. Riney?
I think he's going to be a very effective juggler. And I look at one of the most powerful attributes that I believe he brings to the table right now, and that's to take complex things, complex issues, and simplify them,
mm-hmm.
of the challenge that we have ahead, and also seek to find a middle middle ground that can move us out of paralysis. And I'll give you one very quick example. If you listen to his position on gun control, he is trying to move past paralysis that has affected this country on that issue for a very long time, because you've got two extremes, a group that feels that guns should not be allowed at any in any way, shape, or form, and a group that believes that the right to bear arms under any circumstances is a constitutionally protected right. And if you just get stuck in those two extremes, you move zero. But what he has done is taken a context approach and tried to appeal to middle America and say, perhaps we'll never agree on those extreme positions, but can we all agree that Uzis don't belong in the neighborhoods of our cities?
There you go, and he'll be able to move us forward as we make these tough decisions over the next several years. Well, Dr. Usha Satish and Mr. Robert Riney, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Listeners, we do need to take a commercial break now. We'll be back shortly. This is SUNY Upstate's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR.